As you all may know, some religions are lucky. They get to start out with a holy book. Unitarian Universalists don't make it quite that simple. We find wisdom in many different places. Some of us find it in nature. Some of us do find it in sacred texts from all of the world's religions. Some of us look to video games or songs, fiction books, wise words from wise people wherever we find them. Years ago, there was a song by a guy named Jim Croce, and some of you may have heard his stuff. He was fairly popular. And the song that I remember is called "You Don't Mess Around with Jim." And the song itself wasn't that deep or that meaningful. It was essentially the story of a pool room fight that went bad. But the chorus has stuck with me. You don't tug on Superman's cape. Now, that seems logical. You don't spit into the wind. I'm good with that. You don't pull the mask off the old Lone Ranger, and you don't mess around with Jim. Sometimes wisdom isn't all that profound. Sometimes wisdom is straightforward. Sometimes it's about don't mess with the big, tall, mean guy because he's going to hurt you. Sometimes we ignore wisdom because it seems too simple. And sometimes we just overthink it. I was talking with a friend the other day about an old joke, and it goes something like this. There's a bazillion versions. But a man runs out of gas on a lonely road out in the country, and he gets his gas tank out, or gets his gas can out, and he starts to walk out in the middle of nowhere. And as he walks, he's thinking, boy, I'm in trouble. I've got my gas can. There's no one around. Oh, look, there's a farmhouse. I'll walk to the farmhouse. And he keeps walking, and he's still thinking. And he thinks, boy, out here, I bet a lot of farmers have big, mean dogs. And he walks a little further, and he thinks, I bet there's a big, mean dog at that farm. I bet when I get there, I bet it's going to run at me, and I'm going to be so scared I'm going to try to kick it to get it away from me. And that'll be the minute that the farmer comes to the door, and he's going to see me kick his dog, and he's going to think I'm a burglar. So he's going to not give me any gas, and he might even shoot me. And by then, he was all the way up to the farmyard, and he's not paying any attention to what he does, so he bangs on the door. And the door is opened by a very pleasant-looking woman, maybe about 70, with her hair and a very nice bun. And she says, hi, can I help you? And he looks her in the face and says, I don't want any of your gas, and I didn't kick your dog. And he runs away as fast as he can. There are times that we overthink. Sometimes the wisest way to do things gets ignored. The wisdom gets ignored because the story that we are telling ourselves in our head becomes more real than the story that is happening. Sometimes the feet at the end of our legs become less important than the paper with the dimensions of our shoes written on it. There's another way that humans as a species leave that path of wisdom, and for me, it's very sad. Our search for truth and meaning, our responsible search for truth and meaning, can get derailed when we spend our lives absolutely refusing to break the rules. Now, for those of you who grew up in a traditional church, this is an odd statement coming from a minister. You may have grown up in a church that said to you, don't you dare break the rules. Here they are. They're literally set in stone on some commandment tablets. Don't dare. Our search for truth gets derailed when we follow the letter of the law and allow the spirit to vanish in a puff of smoke. And we defend ourselves by saying, but that's not what the rules said. Common sense and wisdom are cousins. They're members of the same family and they sort of look alike. But poor common sense often gets slaughtered in the name of saving wisdom. I still remember back in 1987, before the internet was a thing, and some of you who went to school before the 90s may remember what you had to do a research paper or to answer homework questions. I think I still have the hernia I got from carrying encyclopedias. And I remember being in the library with a group of young men who had been given a tough assignment for an advanced placement class. And they were my friends, so I was listening, and one boy looked very glum. So his friend Glenn said to him, David, what's the matter? And David said, nothing, only somebody left this chemistry magazine mixed in with these English journals, and I started reading it, and it's amazing. And I'm learning a bunch, but I have to do the AP English questions instead. And Glenn said, well, who cares? Don't you already know the answers to the English questions? You're a straight-A student. You're going to be valedictorian. And David said, yeah, but I need my A. I don't have time to learn anything. I'm too busy writing down answers I already know. And he was deathly serious. Students who don't have time to learn because all their time is taking up proving that they did learn, not a great idea. Mindless adherence to rules leads to the murder of common sense, and religion is often one of the places where the murder happens. When I first started to get involved with immigration reform, and maybe some of you have heard this argument, I heard a very religious person arguing about exactly what was meant by love your neighbor as yourself. Their argument was that everyone couldn't be the neighbor. That couldn't be what was meant, so they had to try to figure out who their neighbor was. Someone else started to argue about the meaning of the word love, and they were very erudite, and they were throwing around words like agape, eros, arguing about the distinctions between how you should love your neighbor in a most learned fashion. And it all came down to looking for a loophole. Some loophole, any loophole in some words, so that they could obey the letter of the law while continuing to hate the exact same brown-skinned and LGBTQ people that they had hated 10 minutes ago. They were determined they were going to figure this out. Judaism gets around this idea in a novel way. Judaism comes right out and tells you not to be an idiot while practicing your religion, and I mean that quite literally. The Jewish festival of Sukkot begins tonight, and it lasts for a week. It's the one where Jewish people build huts in their yards or on their balcony with gaps in the roof or walls so that you can see the stars. It commemorates the Israelites' trip through the wilderness heading for the promised land. And during the entire week of Sukkot, Jews are supposed to actually try to live in the sukkah, or hut. Now, by live, they mean this. Sleep there, even if it's only for a 20-minute nap. Eat there at least once a day. Picnic there, even if it's just a piece of bread. And study the Torah, the holy writings, there. And you have to furnish it. You can't cheat. You have to bring out a couch or a chair. Most people bring out a rug and some lights. So what are the loopholes? Well, there aren't any. They don't need any because interpretations of how to do this are specific. The letter of the law says to sleep in a sukkah during Sukkot. The spirit of the law tells us we're doing this for a specific reason. We want to remember how God kept us safe and sheltered comfortably during the trip to the promised land. So then the questions start to hit. So what if I'm sick? We're looking for the loophole. What if I'm sick? Go inside, the rabbis have written. We're commemorating God keeping us comfy. You'll be comfier inside. Okay, we're still looking for a loophole. What if I get cold? They think they got it now. What if there are mosquitoes? What if it smells funny? And rabbis for 2,000 years have written, go inside. Weren't you listening a minute ago? Next year, build somewhere less smelly and bring the bug spray. Well, what if it rains? I got you now. What if it rains? Guess. For Pete's sake, go inside. If your house was leaking, you wouldn't lay there and get drenched. We're commemorating how God comforted us. The plagues are in a few months. You can torment yourself then. We have to keep the spirit of the law in front of us, because it's the important part. I don't care that we said sleep in the sukkah, for Pete's sake. Spirit, not letter. Do not sleep in icy rain. Do not picnic in a hailstorm. Do not hurt yourself in order to celebrate a holiday about being comforted. Now here's the kicker. Anyone who is legitimately excused from the sukkah but remains there anyway is also not fulfilling the commandment and will not receive a heavenly reward, but it is instead considered, and the word translates as either foolish or an idiot. This is 2,000 years of rabbinical thought. Rabbi Joel Padowitz writes, the great Hasidic master, the Kotzker Rebbe, explains the mystical meaning of sukkah is the concept of bitul, the notion that the extent one focuses on self, he impedes his connection to other people and to God. This is why during Sukkot, one is obliged to leave your worldly possessions and return to the basics, living with bare walls and surrounded by family, friends, and of course the Almighty. However, someone who is consciously aware of his or her personal distress cannot get beyond themselves. Therefore, they can't understand the deeper meaning in that condition, and they're excused from doing it the way we said they had to. Of course, rabbis through history have not been overly generous fools themselves. They're very clear. You should try to eat at least an ounce of bread in that sukkah before you give it up. You should try to say all four short blessings, even if it looks like it's going to rain. And you know what? If it's just sprinkling, wait an hour or two before you give it up and say that, nah, it's raining and hailing and I'm going in now. So get in out of the rain, but it really has to be raining. No cheating. Judaism is clear. Break the rules if you need to do that to understand the deeper idea. Don't think you'll get awarded for suffering when you're told you don't need to suffer. People suffer enough. As we search for truth and meaning, this Jewish idea has great value. Sometimes the rules don't work. Sometimes following the letter of the law only serves as a miscarriage of justice. One of the toughest things I've been asked about over the last year is specifically about breaking the law. How do you know when it's morally right to do something that is legally wrong? And I reminded the person that the Holocaust was absolutely 100% legal, and that the people who fed and hid Anne Frank were criminals. I reminded them that the Georgia slave masters and their whips and the overseers who worked with them, they were 100% legal. and Harriet Tubman and Sojourner Truth. They were criminals moving stolen property. I reminded them that I was a criminal in 1987. I committed criminal trespass on the steps of the Supreme Court when we put the AIDS quilt together. And we stood on those steps begging for them to recognize the rights of AIDS patients because we were tired of watching them die when an ambulance wouldn't come. We were criminals committing criminal trespass. We were criminals inciting to riot. And so when the police came out in full riot gear with face shields and billy clubs and took us down the steps by our feet with our heads bouncing off the steps, they were heroes. They saved the world from a whole bunch of dangerous scofflaws, some of us wearing tutus. Being a Unitarian Universalist means you don't get handed that holy book and a neat set of interpretations and told, here you go, do it this way. We have the wonderful and terrible job of finding wisdom and determining for ourselves what rules we will follow in order to live an ethically sound and moral life. But make no mistake, determine what you believe is an ethical and moral life first, and then write the rules for your observance. How will you live your values? Determine what ethics and morality call you to do, and then you take a good look at the world. When rules and laws promote the spread of evil, when they help to unmake justice, when they tear apart divine order and unmake creation, when they turn the arc of the universe toward oppression, then it is your divine calling to engage in tikkun olam, to heal the world, to bend that arc of the universe toward justice, to renounce evil in its guise of mindless order. Laws and rules are our shelters, and when they do not protect and comfort, but instead trap and terrify and kill and destroy, it's time to consider tearing them down and building again. Search responsibly for truth and meaning. Determine the rules you will live by. When rules and laws created by humans violate the very things they claim to uphold, refuse to be bound. When the hail starts falling, take your picnic inside. Invite your neighbors to go with you if you can. And when the spirit and the letter of the law conflict, let the spirit say do. Be guarded and guided by all that you hold dear. Be grounded in what you know to be morally and ethically right, and do not move. Make the world a better place. Amen.